Hey, welcome to Life 2.0 Podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. Glad to have you joining me from wherever and anywhere you're listening to this program around the world. Glad to have you joining me. First, up the down staircase, in the outdoor. Try to make sense out of the senseless, and if at all possible, find the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get to it. Hey, it's been about a month since I got behind the microphone. Been very, very busy. A lot of traveling, a lot of projects. As I've mentioned on this program before, I sound like I'm a 1940s broadcaster. Welcome to the program. Anyway, you have to excuse my condition a little bit. It's pushing 90 today here in Chicago, and I had not cut the grass for about 10, 12 days, somewhere in there, and it is quite the jungle out there. So I went out and did all the trimming and cut the front yard first and, you know, sweat like Miley Ray Cyrus at a PTA meeting back 20 years ago. And it's a good workout, though. It's as close as I get to remember what football was like this time of year when we did captain's practice or double sessions. You know, I got the white t-shirt on and the shorts, and I don't have a helmet on it. Maybe I should, but you work up a pretty good sweat. So I'm taking a break in between the front yard and getting ready to cut the backyard. And the main reason for doing this was it's a bit of a catch-up show, but I wanted to make sure that Jeff Bezos went up 62 miles above the earth, hung around for 11 minutes, floated for 3 minutes, and dropped back to terra firma safely. He is on the heels of Richard Branson, who had his space flight earlier this past week, and I guess everybody's waiting for Elon Musk to do his thing. So it's a billionaire space race that's going on. And this is also the anniversary of the day men walked on the moon. One small step for man, one giant friggin' leap for all mankind. And I had the honor back in 2009 to do one of the first TED Talks at Langley Air Force Base in Virginia. And it was the first TEDx NASA program. Now, they've had probably six or eight since then. But I was part of that first group of people that were asked to speak at Langley. And it was a bit of a daunting task for me. I'm used to speaking on the radio, no big deal. At one point, my Oprah show, there was like 7 million people listening, but I couldn't see them, so that's pretty easy. I've done my fair share of platform speeches over the years, and that's really not a big deal. However, being in front of 5,000 of the smartest people on the planet that all work for NASA and at Langley Air Force Base, that was pushing it a little bit for me. On top of that, I only have 7 minutes to do my thing. TED Talks are very specific in their time frames and parameters. One's 7, one's 10, one's maybe 18 minutes, somewhere in there. So they give the big name people the 18 minutes, which actually later on in 2018, I did an 18-minute talk in Ontario, Canada. So I guess I can notch that on my belt. But going back to 2009, I was doing this talk, and the theme of that program was the space to create. And there were some heavy hitters there, boy. I mean, people with robotics and mathematics, and holy cow, what is a radio guy from the northwest side of Chicago going to talk about to 5,000 scientists? And so I really had to work on it. And I actually submitted 3 talks. They turned down 2 of them, which was interesting because they are the ones that approached me. Now, back in 2009, I was a hotshot at Oprah Radio, and you know, a lot of people knew who I was and all that kind of stuff that goes along with the Oprah orbit, as we call it. And so they approached me to do this talk, and I suggested 2 talks. I don't recall what they were, but they said, no, those aren't going to work. I'm like, well, you asked me to talk. How could they not work? So anyway, we chiseled at it and chiseled at it, and finally it dawned on me what I felt like at 10 years old when man first walked on the moon. That particular day, July 20th, 1969. And I worked off that as the bottom line premise, because that was a pivot point in human history, if there ever was one, right? So until that point, it was all Buck Rogers stuff. It was fiction. How in the world could you actually get to the moon? It was just beyond comprehension for most human beings. So the fact that it actually happened was a big deal. I was 10. You know, things are magnified when you're 10 years old. I just thought it was the coolest thing in the world. And also on that day, the Cubs were playing the Philadelphia Phillies. and the best third baseman in baseball, Ron Santo, went 4-for-4, and the Cubs won, which is a rare thing these days, apparently. And so it was a big deal. And I can clearly remember that night. You know, they got on the moon like around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They broke it on the radio that the guy was there. But it wasn't until much later in the evening that we were actually able to see the footage, as I recall. And it just so happened to coincide with my dad's monthly poker game at the house. So all the aunts and uncles came over to the house in the afternoon. And I had this scheme I was running. It was a good scheme, by the way. It was profitable. I took this huge, those huge ice tubs. You know, you put them out in the yard. It's like a big galvanized steel thing. And I filled it with ice and water. And I floated sodas in there and old-style beer and a couple other assorted pops and things. And what I would do is I would be a runner. So I knew when they all started playing poker, nobody was leaving the table, but they had to get thirsty at some point. And so I was being a young entrepreneur at 10, and I'd say, hey, I'll run and get that stuff for you, Uncle Chuck. I'll go get that for you, Pop. No problem, Auntie Ann. And so I would run and do that and come back. And inevitably, they'd, you know, put a couple nickels, dimes, and quarters my way, and I thought I was making serious coin, big cash back then. So this went on most of the day, and I remember endless trips back and forth because it was hot. To that little galvanized pool of ice water with all its stuff floating in it, keeping the stock updated, the inventory full, and running back and forth. And it's somewhere right around 10 o'clock that night, literally standing in the kitchen of our big house on Berto Avenue, watching on a very small 13-inch black and white Sears portable television in the dinette, history being made. And man walking on the moon, stepping foot on the moon. And my Uncle Frank LaJoy, who came from Italy, said, oh my God, we've done it. And I guarantee you that Uncle Frank LaJoy had never been any further than Italy and then coming to Chicago and marrying Auntie Margaret. But in his heart and in his mind, in his spirit, his soul, he was like millions of us, as me as well, that felt like we all accomplished this somehow together. We were alive to see this. It was mind-bending and mind-blowing back then to me. So I use that as the premise of my talk at NASA, with the fact that might have been the pivot point for a lot of people in the room to push them in the direction that they're in and do the work that they do. And I was able, through some Oprah leverage, to get the actual footage from NASA to use, just a small chunk. It's about 12 seconds, really, I think, during this 7-minute talk I had. And I was able to use it on the big screen. And I kind of told that story, and I turned around at 3/4 of the way through the talk, maybe 5.5 minutes in, and I said, this is what I saw on the TV. And this enormous screen lights up, and there you see the moon landing and all that goes along with it.
I'm going to step off the limb now. That's one small step for man.
It was just, it was just unbelievable, speechless to me. And I remember standing on the stage, seeing this ginormous image that I saw so many years ago on the little 13-inch TV, thinking, how the hell did I go from that kid to being this guy on a TED stage in front of the NASA folks? It was, it was just the thing. So here we are today, 56 years ago, and now we have billionaires that are going up and down, you know, like they're taking an airplane flight. And so I find it fascinating, and I'm good with it. You know, one giant leap for mankind doesn't mean that it's just limited to certain things or certain people. And of course, they go up and down all the time. Now, not as much as they used to, but all of a sudden, space travel became kind of like the fifth story on the news. I still find flying in a plane utterly fascinating. So for me, the whole space thing is just, I'm enamored with it. I spend more time out at night after I finish taping my other show, standing in the yard, looking at the moon going, that was just freaking something. That was some serious shit, boy. Just the greatest thing. Probably outside of the birth of my kids, might have been the most pivotal moment in my life at 10, to think that we actually accomplished that. So, of course, society has changed drastically in the last half a century plus. And there's a lot of chattering of teeth and commentary about the fact that some billionaires are going into space, and that it's somehow a bad thing. I don't know how that's a bad thing. But they go on, these people that have a problem with it, go on to say, well, you know, he could be eradicating hunger with that money. Fill in the blank, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Richard Branson. They should be doing fill in the blank. They should be helping homeless veterans. They should be taking care of kittens. They should be building more kindergartens. Just fill in the blank. And I don't buy that for nothing. It's their money. What do I care what they do with it? And here's why this is not a thing for me. I've said this for years. If there's something bothering you, if there's an issue bothering you, homeless veterans, for example, or veterans in general, get off your ass, go to the VA and volunteer. They'd love to have you. I go there every now and again, put my time in, and I spend time with the old guys and gals, and we just talk. I was here just a week ago. We had quite a conversation. All they want is somebody to listen. So I know that I've got that part covered. That's something that I think should be a little bit different. It's on me to do it. So for me to sit back and think that Jeff Bezos or Richard Branson or Elon Musk should somehow give billions of dollars to save veterans, and I just think that's the most ludicrous thing I ever heard, or one of the most ludicrous things I've ever heard. I've heard some shit. That's among it. I mean, it makes no sense to me. That'd be like them saying, well, John, you make X amount per year. Why don't you be doing this differently? Projecting onto other people our concerns is a real Achilles heel for society. And just to balance that out a little bit, I don't know what Jeff Bezos does for charity, nor do I give a shit, quite frankly. I do know, because you see this errant information out there, the corporate tax structure is stupid and sucks, and they get away with a lot, but I didn't write the tax code either, so not much I can do about it. I don't want to get pissed off at that, but I know that these guys all pay personal income tax, so they're working the system, and the system is what it is, and we all live under a certain system. So either you buck the system and get pissed off at it, or you figure out ways to work around it. These three men, and so many other people that have great wealth, my former boss, Oprah Winfrey included, they created something from nothing, as I see it. And they have a consumable product. So I'm not really sure still what Richard Branson does with Virgin Atlantic, but he made a lot of money. Bezos, of course, got the world to stop thinking about Amazon as a river and more as a clearinghouse for shit we really don't need to impress people we don't know for reasons we can't understand. But there's some stuff there. But it's a consumable, platform. And the same thing with Elon Musk, electric cars and the rest of the stuff he's done. So when you build a better mousetrap and people get on board with that, I don't know how you find fault with the people that built mousetrap. I just don't see it. I don't know these men. I'm not a particular fan one way or the other, but it just really roasts my chicken and rubs my rhubarb when I hear somebody say, they shouldn't be spending money over here that they have. They should be spending it over here. And those very people aren't doing jack squat on their own to do something about it. And if they were, they'd be too busy to complain about it. So I really needed to get that off my chest. If they want to spend, $20 billion to go in space, what do I care? You don't have to participate in what Amazon does or buy an electric car. Those are all these options. So just wanted to state that clearly. And should I ever become a billionaire, I will donate money to things that I think are really important. And in a 180 contrast to whatever Bezos is or isn't doing, again, I'm not going to spend any time digging around to see how much money he's donated to charity and where. I know that Amazon has done a lot of environmental things, and whether that's by corporate charter or just because they feel like they need to be, do good in the public eye, I don't care. I mean, really, when you really start digging into this stuff, is that stuff we need to spend time on deciding, judging on what some billionaire is doing? Anyway, Jeff Bezos' ex-wife, Mackenzie Scott, was married to him from 1993 to 2019. Less than 2 months after finalizing her divorce from Bezos, Mackenzie Scott signed the Giving Pledge, a commitment to give away the majority of her approximately $35 billion net worth. So she's doing the things that she thinks she needs, education especially, and in that direction. So when a headline pops up and says, fill in the blank billionaire is spending X amount of dollars to go into space for 11 minutes, and people come out of the woodwork going, that's wrong, they should be spending it on this, X, Y, and Z, I say bullshit. I say mind your own business, and if it bothers you, go do something about it, and you won't have to worry about it as much. And then think of Mackenzie Scott, who was married to the guy from 93 to 2019, and within 2 months of jettisoning him, pun intended, she's given away a majority of her $35 billion that she had in stock from Amazon. There's the yin and the yang of that whole deal. All right, enough about space. A couple more things that I had in my mind, they're all kind of stuck together. again, when I started this, I said I want to make sure that he went up and came down okay. I think it's a good thing. I think this is a good. I know there's pledges out there that were wanting Bezos to not come back, you know, let him go and not come back. But I don't understand all that. I just can't wrap my mind around the fact that we live in this free market system around the world. And if you figure out a way to earn a million, a billion, or $1 trillion, how is that bad? I don't get it. As I mentioned, Miss Winfrey, worked with her for 4.5 years. Seemed normal to me. Just had a lot more zeros in her bank account than I do. She gave money away for projects and platforms and things that most people never heard of. There's the stuff that made the headlines with her Girls Academy and things like that. But I know behind the scenes she was doing a ton of stuff. And she was fried for things. She should be doing more. No, you should be doing more. That's the thing. That's what I grew up with, right? If there's a hole, you find a way to fill it. If there's a mistake, you go back and fix it. If you need to make a U-turn, you make it. But to sit here and complain and say, this person who doesn't even know you're alive, who is a billionaire, who decided, Bezos has been working on this since 2000. It was his dream to go into space. Mission accomplished. Have a great day. But I don't know how then you sit there and point and go, he should be using his money a different way. It should be his choice. And that's the end of that. Let me just switch gears real quick. I had a couple things that were pressing on me that keeps my lifelines intact. I have an auntie and an uncle who are in their mid-80s, and they are the last of their kind. They're the dinosaurs that live in the Fox Valley way up north in Wisconsin in the Appleton, Nina Menasha, Grand Chute and Little Chute area. Yeah, hey there. And she is in her mid-80s. They're both not in really good health, but you know, that's kind of the par for the course at this point. About 3 months ago, I went up and saw her in the hospital. I didn't think I'd see her again, and she was doing okay. We went up and saw her for an afternoon, brought her some ice cream because she doesn't have any teeth. Ice cream is a good thing. So I sat with Aunt Patty and Uncle Ray, and you know, they had we had a nice time. And in the last 60 months, they have lost all of their children to cancer. And much like my mind could not comprehend what it was like to see a man on the moon, to look at the moon up there and go, there was a human there at one point. It still has time to grasp it and can't quite get it. The same thing holds true for that non-believability factor when I realized that my aunt and uncle have lost their children. They were all about my age over the last 60 months from different cancers. It's one thing for you to have to bury one of your children before your time. It's another thing to put three of them in the ground. I don't know how they're upright. I don't know how they smile. I don't know how they laugh. But they do. And in all of that, I think there is a faith factor, not in a religious way, like somehow they're in a better place. Because if there's one thing that'll piss parents off if you've lost a child, is somebody, well-meaning as it may be, coming up and saying, they're in a better place or God has a plan for them. F off, right? So sitting with these two, it was almost like by osmosis, getting some of the strength that they have. These are farm-bred people. My Uncle Ray was a truck driver, and he drove stock cars, and Auntie Pat never worked. She raised the kids and stayed home, and they're in the same house they have for 62 years, as long as I've been alive. The same little tiny house they have on Charlotte Street. And I spent a lot of time there as I was a kid, and it's just like almost a second home for me to go and spend time with them. As my mom and dad are gone, and her sisters are all gone, her kids are gone. So we just sat there and talked about the old times a little bit and reminiscing and just spending time with each other, because time is such a very precious commodity, which leads me into this thing I've talked about many times before, which is our eventual demise. And the physical part of that, I'm not talking about death itself, but all the stuff that we accumulate in a lifetime. So when we came back from the trip, across the alley here, there's a row of townhouses, and two or three of the townhouses over the years have had one family, extended families, living in there. And people started dropping off. They got older. They died. They were put in a home, whatever. We get back here, and there's this massive estate sale going on. The doors are open. Professionals are doing it. Cars are lining the street. Here's me, Mr. Naive, going, wonder why there's so many cars on the street. Well, that's because there's for sale signs. and you could walk into these people's home and take whatever you want for a price. And so I started thinking about it. Once again, it ramps me up, and I don't know why it bothers me so much, but it's like, on one hand, I don't want somebody coming in where I lived and going through my stuff. If you want to take it to Goodwill, that's all fine and dandy with me. Separation, I think, must be the point. But people were coming and going, and I'm just watching them walking out with armloads of people's stuff. And on one hand, I realized that the stuff doesn't mean shit. Something they bought, enjoyed for a while, is gone, goes to somebody else. OPS, other people's shit, is what the world thrives and moves around, right? Look at eBay, look at Amazon with Bezos. A lot of the stuff is already used. You just keep buying it. We keep buying it and buying it and buying it over and over again. And so watching these people walking out was like ants going into a hole and coming out with something to eat, some food, some nourishment. They're walking away with little things and big things. And it's always bothered me. And I try to make a connection to it, try to find the obvious pieces buried in the absurdity of all of it, the sense in the senseless. Is, you know, for 5-6 years I watch people live there, they die, signs go up, somebody comes and takes all your stuff and you're done. That's like the finality of it. And there's a few bucks in the bank. So really, at least for me, gets me into a perspective piece, like, what's going on here? What's this really all about, right? Can't be about the stuff. I got a lot of stuff in my office. I like my stuff. I got the giant head of the Creature of the Black Lagoon. I got the Wolfman model next to him. I got my Randy Hunley catcher's mitt over here. I got my Deacon Jones helmet. I got my Coast Guard stuff. I got more stuff in here, but it's my stuff. And I'm not planning on giving it away to somebody walking in if I kick off. I'll give it away before that happens, if at all possible. But when you start to think about how much stuff we spend time on and where it eventually ends up, it reminds me of what I always say, that, you know, depending on how you lived or where you lived or what your family decides, we're all of us, whether it's Jeff Bezos or Richard Branson or Elon Musk or the people across the street or Uncle Ray and Auntie Patty or myself, we're all either an estate sale, a yard sale, or a garage sale in the making, period. It's just the way it works. So it seemed to me, from a higher perspective, if at all possible, thinking about going above the earth for 11 minutes. Not that I got the kind of cash that would allow me to do that, but I'd like to see it. I think that when we look from the top down, things are very, very clear. Even if for just a short time, there's this condition or this, what I want to say, phenomenon, and it's called the overview effect. And it can only happen from a certain distance or viewpoint. And it's almost like a cognitive shift in awareness, because our whole lives we're on the earth looking up and seeing this vast expanse of sky. Like, wow, look at all that up there. Isn't that cool? But when you reverse that and you go, whether you're on the moon or you're just 62 miles up and you can see the planet, at least a big part of it in its totality, and realizing we are just this marble floating in a sea of blackness, and everything down here for the most part is just it's chaos that we create for no apparent reason. There's a shift that takes place. And for me, getting some sort of mental clarity above all the shit that takes place, I think is of the utmost. And so the fact is that probably you and I are not going to go to space anytime soon. I could see images from space that help. Sometimes on my screen in the background of my computer, I put that image up where it says you are here, and there's this like a line where it shows this tiny dot, and we're in this vast Milky Way, as a reminder that this is just craziness. All, whether the shit you buy or deciding whether or not you think that Jeff Bezos or any other billionaire should spend their money a different way, or you've lost your children and you sit in deep, deep grief and just kind of go on, all of a sudden, at least for me, it comes into some sense of order, that there's a beginning and a middle, and an end to everything. And for us to think that it's not like that is our fault. That somehow this goes on and buying a bunch of stuff defines who you are when it ends up being carried out into the alley years later. That you're going to just have a great, happy life with no ups and downs. And if you read the right self-help books, you'll get through it. There's some value to that, but there's no books to help you get through losing 3 children in 60 months. And so finally, the last part of that whole judgment thing, to spend time, 1 ounce of your energy that you don't even have to spare, because there's no guarantee you're going to be here tomorrow, much less later today. What Jeff Bezos or any other billionaire is doing to me is just, it's just a waste. Do what you can, where you are with what you have, and you won't have time to worry about the billionaires. Guaranteed. Until next time, safe travels here and on space. Take care. Adios.